Is it really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Now, welcome to Monday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. You heard Elise Glink's voice there. She'll be along a little bit later in the program to talk. So if you were going to do one thing in your house, if you were going to do one sort of remodel, kitchen, bathroom, pick it, what is it that has the most return on investment? We'll talk to Elise Glink about that because, frankly, I was a little surprised by it. But people are doing that now to resell their homes. And the National Association of Realtors is out with a list of how you should spend your money inside and out in order to get a good return on investment, or the lease later in the program. Also, a little bit later, we will talk about the Daily Gist, and Amy Guth will be here to kick that around. But I'd like to start with the folks from Chicago. You know, Catherine Davis is in the studio now. Catherine, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, Steve.
And thanks for squeezing me in. I know you were with the mayor earlier today.
Of course. Always make time for you.
This is the third tech day in Chicago?
Yeah, the third annual tech day.
I must have missed the first two. I wasn't aware of those.
Well, this year it took place at Relativity, which is like one of the biggest homegrown tech companies in Chicago. They make legal tech software. And the mayor was there with several CEOs and leaders of Chicago tech companies, announcing that these companies plan to hire 2,000 new people over the course of the next year.
Before the end of the year is over?
Within a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, these names are names we've already been talking about, by and large, right?
Exactly. So think like Cameo, Relativity is one, Snapsheet, Kin Insurance. There's a lot that we've talked about before that have kind of announced these hires as they've had new funding rounds or things that we're covering weekly. But today they kind of came together and, you know, kind of the private and the civic coming together to announce.
Well, you know, Mayor Emanuel certainly was a friend of the tech sector. And is it too soon to know yet what kind of friend Mayor Lightfoot is going to be?
Well, that's actually something I was thinking about this morning at the press conference, that, you know, when she came to office, we weren't exactly sure if she was going to be a champion for tech the same way Rahm Emanuel was. But being involved in the Chicago Tech Day, you know, and really kind of taking an interest in how the tech sector can help grow our local economy, I think is a step in the right direction and something that's being really well received by tech leaders.
Catherine Davis is in the studio. She is a senior staff writer.
Associate editor.
Associate editor at Chicago. I know the star is rising so fast I can't keep up. Okay, so I was talking, and you've got a lot of stories today about people bringing in money, raising money, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the companies that is just raised a couple million is this company, Brewbike, which has changed significantly since it started in, what, 2015, was it?
Yeah, it was about 2014, 2015.
And at Northwestern University. Tell me about Brewbike.
Yeah, so they got started at Northwestern. The founder, Lucas Phillips, he had kind of a coffee bike cargo hybrid coffee stand.
This is kind of like the guy who would sell the Krispy Kreme donuts at in Minnesota, right?
Yeah.
In a way. Yeah.
Similar. And so, you know, he would ride this bike around campus and employ other students to help him. And they would be kind of like the go-to coffee shop on campus.
Iced coffee. Right,
yes. Okay. It started with cold brew coffee, partly because it's easy to, you know, you don't have to keep anything
warm.
Hot.
Right.
And last week they raised $2 million and announced that they also sold their 100,000th cup of coffee.
Pretty amazing.
And since Northwestern, they have expanded their two colleges in Texas, and then another one, University of Miami, and they plan to just keep on expanding to more colleges.
So where's Lucas now? Is he still with the company? Do you know?
So he is still with the company. He's here in Chicago. He graduated from Northwestern, so I think now he's just kind of focused on managing Brewbike.
But he's not the CEO, I don't think.
He's not the CEO, no. The CEO, Randy Paris, he is actually based in Austin, where I guess the startup's headquarters have officially moved now.
Right.
Kind of sad because I love covering them. But they're an Austin company now, even though they're born here.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, Lucas had a good idea, but here we are in Chicago or Evanston, And the cold coffee season's pretty short, so now they're focusing on warmer climates?
Exactly. You know, the CEO was telling me that as they expand, they're really looking at warm region areas, right? I mean, Texas is a great place for a cold brew startup, same with Florida, and I think they're just going to continue with those warm states.
They're selling now their own coffee?
Yeah, so they got started selling Limitless Coffee, which is a local coffee brand. But to kind of expand the brand awareness for Brewbike, they have started actually manufacturing their own coffee. And you can even buy it wholesale on their website and keep it in your fridge if you want. Brewbike cold brew.
Is that the brew box you're talking about?
Yep, that would be brew box.
So you just buy a box of cold coffee and put it in your fridge.
Kind of like boxed wine. It's a similar mechanism. You know, you press down the little button and
No, tell me, how does it work?
You know how it works.
So one of the flavors you're selling is cinnamon, brown sugar, cold coffee.
That's right.
Does that sound, doesn't sound so good to me.
It sounds like it'd be really overly sweet, right? But I haven't tried it, but Randy said that it's good, so
Randy's trying to sell you something. Okay, so another company that raised some money, I think, $20 million in Series A funds, is this company called 3Kit. Now, the guy behind 3Kit, Ben Houston, was on the show probably a year or two ago, and he was a guy who worked in...
Visual effects software.
Yeah, like special effects for movies and things like that.
Exactly.
Game of Thrones and shows such as that.
Avengers, Harry Potter.
And somehow he brought his company or his work to companies like Crate and Barrel.
Right.
And it's taken off. Explain that for me.
Yeah. So he kind of realized that there was, you know, a different way to monetize the software he created. So he's using it now to make 3D product visualizations, for companies to sell their merchandise online. So for someone like a client like Crate and Barrel, that really comes in handy. If you want to look at a couch and you can get kind of a 3D image and view of it, you can really get an idea of whether it's something you want in your home.
And you don't have to rely on taking pictures of the couch in every particular fabric possible, right? He, with his software, is able to recreate that couch with just a couple of touches of a button.
Exactly. And really kind of bringing the augmented reality component to it that makes it so lifelike.
He's got dozens of brands now. He's raised $20 million. One of his investors is Steve Young.
That's right. Yeah, he's the former San Francisco 49ers quarterback. Another notable investor is Chicago serial entrepreneur Goddard Abel. He's behind G2 Crowd.
Okay.
We've talked about him on the show before. And then Shasta Ventures, which has also invested in companies like Nest and Dollar Shave Club.
So what do they do with the $20 million?
So they're going to use that to expand. So that means hiring a lot of people, ramping up marketing initiatives, and just kind of getting the word out, getting more clients.
Because it's kind of limitless when it comes to retail, right? Any online store could benefit from this.
Exactly. And they even have apparel sellers. So I think Men's Warehouse is one of their clients. So, I mean, this comes in handy for a ton of different verticals.
So like that overpriced winter coat you're wearing, what's that brand?
Canada Goose.
Yeah, Canada Goose. So Canada Goose could use that and jack the price up a little more.
Yeah, maybe.
It's a nice looking coat, though.
It's easy. A warm coat.
I'm sure it's a warm coat. Second Kitchen is another company we've talked about, and they really have filled a need where you go to... Actually, I was at a vodka bar in Highwood last week, and it's a distillery. I think it's called Vodka 28, it's something like that. But they're very limited in what they can do. I don't think they can cook food. And so this is where Second Kitchen comes in.
Right. So Second Kitchen, this is a Chicago startup that got its start maybe a year or two ago. And basically what they've done is created a platform that lets kitchenless establishments, so think like that distillery you're talking about, breweries, hotels, they are able to offer food from nearby restaurants. So if you can go into a brewery here in Chicago, I think Hopewell is one that works with them, and say, hey, like, let's order a burger, right? But Hopewell doesn't have a kitchen. You can go to this kind of touchscreen kiosk and order, and it'll come straight to your table at that venue.
And that works well. Who pays for that? Does the bar pay for that? Because it's the restaurants probably making the money, right?
So, yes. So, it's a B2B product in which, you know, if you're the brewer per se, you're paying Second Kitchen to have this tech in your restaurant. But I do think that the end, whoever's making the food, the nearby kitchen is the one making them.
Because it works for them. They've got customers in hold. It's like they've opened a satellite restaurant.
Exactly.
Okay. And then also I see that Travis Kalanick is trying to compete with them in this... sort of space. Can you explain that for me?
Yeah.
Did I pronounce that name correctly?
Yes, Travis Kalanick. He is the Uber co-founder. So he's kind of quietly building a food delivery startup called Cloud Kitchens. And so it's kind of similar to Second Kitchen, except Cloud Kitchens is more for like the Grubhubs, right? So not necessarily delivering to other establishments, but delivering via DoorDash, via Grubhub.
Explain that for me. I don't know what you mean.
So if you, you know, so Grubhub might like an option like this because the Cloud Kitchen is just the kitchen. It's not an actual restaurant people are going to eat. It just kind of facilitates the food delivery.
So you would be making the food there that would be delivered by Grubhub.
Exactly.
You'd be the third party. Okay. And Data Cube's raising $15 million. This is, again, this is another area in the Chicago market where there's been real innovation in insurance, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I first started doing this job, there was just so much happening in the insurtech space, and it really seems like there still is. $15 million is, you know, nothing to bat an eye at. But basically what they've done is they've created a platform for insurance companies that allows them to make underwriting decisions really quickly and based on risk data. So it's just allowing insurers to, you know,
so it's a data company pretty much.
Exactly. And they're selling their service to insurance companies.
Okay. So there's that. But then there's the company where you have an app where you can file a crash claim from your phone or something like that?
Yeah, so that's Snapsheet, and they've created a platform that lets people file automobile insurance claims via their smartphone by just taking a photo.
Okay.
So really simplifying
and
that.
And ClearCover is another one sort of shaking up the insurance business, right?
Yeah, so they're also in the car insurance sector, and they use artificial intelligence to help underwriters make better decisions.
One more. Impact Engine closes $25 million fund to back social impact startups. Now, this is a group that's going to be giving this money out. Have they announced already where it's going to go out?
So they have announced a few. They say that they have invested in 9 companies so far. So they closed a $25 million fund. Some of the companies include Cancer IQ. I think we've talked about them, but they help providers identify patients with certain cancers. Then also Fixer, which is kind of like a on-demand handyman startup.
Right. We've talked about them too. Catherine Davis, thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
We'll see you again next week. Listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Elise Glink is on a phone line. She's the brains behind Best Money Moves and ThinkLink.com. Elise, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Nice to be here.
So, you know, so much of what we've been talking about in the past few months is the coming of legal marijuana in Illinois. And, you know, where you can sell it, that certainly was the focus last week with the lottery in the city of Chicago, but where you can smoke it too, because it's the sort of thing where even though people think it's coming and they can smoke it wherever they in their own home, for a lot of people that's just not going to be the case.
No, especially in condo associations. So what we're seeing is more homeowners associations and condo associations taking actions to ban or limit smoking of all kinds, not just cannabis, but also regular cigarette and cigar smoke. And depending on the building and the physical structure, they take more actions or less actions, which could limit the rights of people in their homes to enjoy it as they want.
Do you have any idea how many condo associations allow cigarette smoking now? Because I would think it would be a minority.
Well, I don't know. I don't have a firm number for you, but there are certain cities where it's more prevalent than others. Like places like San Francisco, for example, have taken more of an active or proactive sort of look at this. And they, you know, cities like Denver, which already has legalized marijuana throughout the state, right? So they also are taking a hard look at where somebody can smoke pot and how they can enjoy it.
There's a question at thinklink.com from a condo owner who apparently is looking forward to the change in the law. And he says he's worried his association is going to ban marijuana use, and he wondered if that was legal. And you pointed out, well, they ban a lot of things.
They do. I mean, they ban the how big a dog you could have living with you, how many pets you might be able to have. You maybe can't have that pot-bellied pig you've become so fond of. And so, you know, state law, which now is going to allow cannabis or marijuana smoking, is going to come into conflict with how people actually want to live in their homes and want to live smoke-free. And I think there's going to be some residents who are going to be up in arms about that. But at the end of the day, your condo declaration is going to decide how you're able to pass those rules or how the condo association is and what you can do to fight them.
And so we're talking about smoking marijuana. A condo association would not be able to ban you from using edibles, right?
Correct.
Okay.
If you can't smell it, so the problem is that air filtration systems in a condominium may be shared between units. So your unit will, the fan will pull it out into what might be a common ductwork, for example. And some of that smoke could leak into the apartment next door. And if that's the case, then you're going to run into a situation where your neighbor who doesn't want pot smoke filtering in under her doors or into her air conditioning system might complain, and then that would be the problem.
So if you want to fix this, you need to fix your board, your condo board.
Right. I mean, again, it all goes back to voting, right? You've got to vote or maybe run for the board if you've got very strong feelings about this. And you should survey the building to see how they feel. And honestly, condo buildings where the majority of people are younger will probably be more in favor of this than condo buildings where the majority are older. And maybe they don't like it because they may have health issues that smoking gets in the way of. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out in condos all over Chicago.
You know, the National Association of Realtors is out with a study on home improvements and where you should spend your money and where you get the best return on investment, which is interesting to me because, well, I suppose people do home improvements to sell their house, but a lot of times my home improvements have always been just to live in my house better. How often do we fix things up to sell them rather than just to enjoy them?
A lot of times, as it turns out. And in other parts of the country, not the Chicago metropolitan area, which, of course, as we've talked many times before, is kind of lagging in real estate right now. But around the country, people will often fix up their homes and expect to see a profit on top of recouping the cost of that actual project.
It doesn't happen very often, does it?
No, it doesn't. You know, so it's interesting. This is the, I don't know, 25th year or something that the National Association of Realtors and the National Association of the Remodeling Industry has ranked the most profitable home renovations for the interior of the home. And the number one is a complete kitchen renovation. But they say that that project will cost you an average of around $68,000 to $70,000. And if you sell within a year, you're only going to recoup a little less than 60% of that. And so if you're hoping to make money on it, you better be very careful.
I thought it was interesting that new flooring, new wood flooring, really has the greatest return on investment.
New wood flooring gives you more than 100% back. It gives replacing the floors is a pretty big pain in the neck, staining them and all
right.
That. You don't really want to do that too often. So, and HVAC systems, upgrade that, and that you get almost everything back. And so it's interesting to think about kind of what you should be doing, and mostly it's what the homeowner coming in, the buyer, doesn't want to do.
So if you invest in an HVAC system that's really good, maybe then you won't know if your teenager's smoking pot in the basement.
Exactly, Steve. You just want to keep all of that stuff private.
Okay, so that's inside. Outside, I guess I'm not too surprised. The best investment is a new roof. That's where you're going to make your money.
Yeah, again, people don't really want to replace roofs. It's annoying, hard to do, especially in the winter in Chicago. But a new garage door, for example, will give you almost a full, 100% back. It's about 95% of that project cost recovered. So,
I was going to say vinyl windows are a better investment than wood windows, and I suppose that just is because vinyl windows are less expensive.
They're less expensive, and you don't have to keep repainting them. So one of the problems with wood siding is, it looks fantastic, but it requires a tremendous amount of maintenance and upkeep. And so when you put in vinyl siding and you put in vinyl windows, that's something that you simply don't have to do, and that's a huge savings over time for buyers, and hence they like it because they don't have to schedule it, think about it, pay for it.
That is Elise Gling. Find out more at thinklake.com or bestmoneymoves.com. Great to talk to you again, Elise.
You too. See you soon.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. No, we were so close to closing out the year without any more hiccups. So close.
The nurses at the University of Chicago Medical Center are planning on going on strike again after they couldn't come to an agreement on contract details. 2,200 workers will step out again the day before Thanksgiving. There is one last bargaining session on the 26th. This came together as a last-ditch effort to avoid the strike, but once these big things are set in motion, it's unlikely that they'll get changed. But one big change that we'll definitely be noticing is in the smartphone world. For years, the major players have been trying to perfect the folding smartphone. You know, like a book. But Chicago-based Motorola did their research, and their next move could pay off. They're rebooting one of the most popular phones of all time, the Motorola Razr. But as a smartphone, the size will be bigger, and so will the price tag. It'll be roughly $1,500.
Oh, my wallet. It's such a cool phone, though.
I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
It's 12:51. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Okay, Amy Guth is in the studio. She's the host of The Daily Gist, the podcast from Crane Chicago Business. Nice to see you again.
Hello.
So, having done this show, you know, I live in the suburbs. I live in Southern Lake County, and I've seen some of the businesses near and dear to my heart be sucked downtown. Not the least of which is the Chicago Bulls. We used to have Bulls all over me.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, I have friends who were coaches and all of that. And then Rahm Emanuel brought them downtown. That's a, you know, sort of a, maybe not a perfect example. Walgreens and others that keep bringing
companies down. Yeah, we're seeing a lot coming to the new post or the old post office and all these big company, McDonald's, very big deal. Yeah.
And now Danny Ecker writes this story in Cranes about how, what? Companies are starting to move out?
Yeah, well, I talked to Danny today on the podcast about this really interesting story about how some companies are kind of like, you know what? We don't want to move downtown. We're going to stay put, or we're going to have a little bit of a satellite. And it's about really responding to workers' needs, because a couple things are happening. One, millennials are older. We still use the word millennial to mean
as if they're young.
20
is. Right,
yeah,
right.
Millennials are in their mid-30s now. So, you know, that's an age when a lot of people are starting families.
So a lot of these companies that move downtown to attract millennial talent
suddenly are like, well, they live in the burbs.
Right.
So we're seeing that. You know, he made the point that it'll be interesting to compare these trends against the 2020 census once that data is out to see just where do people live and what's happening. But it's a lot of a sense of companies don't really want to lose some of their younger workers. And so they're like, you know what, maybe we'll just invest in the burbs and make it a really fun place to work. Some of the cachet of working downtown, some of the perks make it just cool to be here.
So make Schaumburg feel like Fulton Market?
Good luck, but okay.
I was going to say,
right.
You're going to take some cash, I think, to do that.
Yes. And then, you know, that brings us to the money. Because there was a kind of this exodus for downtown, that leaves some major bargains in the suburbs right now. Mm. And so Danny Ecker made the point that just a few years ago, less than 10 years ago, it was about 49% more to rent an office in downtown than out in the burbs. And he makes the caveat of like, it's not uniformly so. Closer to O'Hare's, less expensive than, you know, Northern Lake County, things like that. But generally speaking, it's 49%. Now it's 75% more. So,
wow.
I mean, that's pretty significant. So if you're, you know, like, well, we want to invest more in our company or we want to save some money, that's a good way to do it.
And so, and there, but then I wonder too, because there's this huge apartment glut coming, right? Everywhere you look, there are giant apartment buildings being built. Is this, are we seeing sort of a crucial reversal?
That's what I asked him. And he said, you know, anybody in commercial real estate, any of the brokers will still say, no, the trend is still going towards downtown.
Okay.
People are still going downtown. But something is happening. Is it a leveling out? Is it that companies are using co-working spaces and saying, he called them a touchdown office so that you can be downtown if you have a big client coming in, you want to meet with downtown. There's people that, you know, if you have workers, maybe sales that want to check in at an office downtown, they have a place to do so. But then the headquarters is out in the burbs. You know, we're seeing kind of stuff like that. But it was an interesting idea of that. What is happening?
Well, nothing's forever, right? But this seems to have been a pretty quick. And we're not saying it's a turnaround, right? We're just saying that people are starting to eye the suburbs again.
Yep. So it might kind of balance out a little bit. So
okay.
I thought it was a really interesting conversation.
There's also a story that's really got too many words for me. It has to do with Blue Cross Insurance.
Anytime insurance is involved, it's a lot of words.
We're all involved in open enrollment these days, or many of us what is this new Blue Cross product?
So Blue Cross Association, which is the network of all of them, right? And so Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois is part of that. They're teaming up with other blue plans to make this kind of nationwide provider network. And it's the idea of helping give employers An option to help, you know, save costs. That's a big thing. Healthcare costs for your workers is a big deal. So it's kind of in, it's being presented as that. It's going to help control rising healthcare costs and make this nationwide network of providers. You know, I was kind of looking around online. I'm always interested in kind of the, what's the reaction? What are people saying on right. social media about this? What it seems like, you know, initially people were like, oh, this is going to make this so much easier. And then it became, this seems like I have fewer choices. So then, you know, you start digging and fact finding from around there. It does seem like it may be, it's going to streamline a lot of processes and a lot of things. I don't know whether that means it's going to give you less options as a patient or
they
not.
They refer to it as a high performance plan, but what that means is that it's we're going to do what is most likely to work most quickly, kind of that high, kind of high performance.
Yep, indeed. So it's okay. It's less like, well, let's kind of see, let's order a bunch of it. More like this is the evidence-based was the term that was kept being associated with this. So it's like, this is what works. This is what we're going to do.
Amy Guth is the host of The Daily Gist, the podcast from Crane Chicago Business. You can check it out at WGNRadio.com as well. Amy, thanks for coming by.
Thanks so much.